Welcome back to another Level Up podcast with Trevor and
Sherry.
And today we're going to be talking about the dangers of social media.
Yeah, is it linked to any mental health issues and things like that?
That
would be a really good one.
That and much, much more. Can't wait to dive right into this topic.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm, as said, I'm the pastor of Brant Community Church. I have spent a lot of time looking at mental health issues and the things that affect childhood development and trauma and addiction. So I have a lot of experience in that area.
All very hot topics also in today's climate that we're in right now. So, and now looking at those and then kind of bringing a link to social media. You. What was the title that of your message or of your series?
The title of the series was
Left
to our own devices. Yeah.
Which is a. I love the double entendre on the word devices for that, because too often we are left to our own devices here, which makes it kind of odd, because as people that are traditionally, I mean, we're a tribal person. We're used to human-to-human contact. But at the same time, we're used to having a community. We're now finding that more and more people are creating and finding communities online, which is giving them that community feel, but it's not giving them the true human interaction, which is meaning people are, I think the new term that they're using is loneliness. We would call loneliness as I'm lonely, but it's now becoming an official thing.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. So, do you want to kind of maybe kick the ball off in that direction, and what you've been finding and what you've been learning and talking about? Or
yeah, I think that as the more that we search out online relationships and connection, we're doing less face to face connection and relationship building. So people are having multiple conversations, maybe in an evening. Maybe it's someone in their adolescence or post adolescent years, and they're talking to lots of people online, alone in their room or alone somewhere. And again, it's emphasizing the connection, but also emphasizing the loneliness.
And well, first of all, I'm really glad we're doing this in person, because it would have been odd to do it on camera. But and is it affecting young people, or is it specific to an age group, or are they finding that maybe older people, and I'm saying older, like even our age and up, can be just as addicted to the device and creating that loneliness for ourselves?
For sure. I think that, sort of the iGen 0 to 20, they're most affected because they're sort of they're the natives, right? They've grown up with the internet, they've grown up with phones. And so we see more effect on them because we have more users there. But as we look at some of the other online things that can be destructive, whether it be online cheating sites, pornography, things like that, actually, they're not likely as involved as those who are older than that generation. So, again, it depends on how they're using it. I mean, again, it's how familiar they are with technology and the social media apps that are available.
Yeah.
All right, that brings up an interesting question to me. So, I've seen people from old to young have their tablets and devices and things like that. My husband and our kids were out for dinner, and we saw a family of three. It was one kid and two adults, and they had the phone the whole time. They put it down and talked to the waitress, and then it was this the whole time. We have a strict rule of no devices at the dinner table. So I was surprised to see it in real life. You alluded to this last Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
What effect is these handheld devices having on marriages and relationships, with either like parental relationships, marriage relationships?
Well, I think, one of the big things is that we're being distracted by our devices and not paying attention to the people in our world, especially those who are closest to us. So we tend to, we become so affixed to these devices that we can't let them down. We have to have them in our hands. And I think it's FOMO, fear of missing out. I think a lot of people stay connected because what am I going to miss out on if I don't connect with these people in my sort of online world? And at the same time, they're missing out on the face-to-face conversations and connections with family. So again, I see it all the time. And I used to think it was just a setup for advertising, everybody with their phone. But I'm seeing a lot more of it in real life. And I think it just... when I'm distracted by my phone, I'm saying to my kids, this matters more than you do, or my spouse, this matters more than you do.
Well, it really goes back to choices. You're making a choice to either be engaged on the phone or with the person that you're with. And in the early days, where you know, maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when everyone started to get phones, this is what you would see. You know, the phone would be hooked on everyone's hip. Nobody does it. I was never that guy. Sure. Full disclosure, I was not that guy. But it'd be on the hip, and it would buzz. And when you're having dinner with somebody, you'd see this the whole time.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, for goodness sakes, just put the phone on the table. It bugs me more that you're looking down. And now we're so far removed from that that if that was all we had to worry about, that seems small, because now it's just people looking at their phone the whole time like this. When the food comes, they put it down, they eat, and all that. But and now, is it Rev? Is it Dave? Is it Padre?
It's Dave.
Okay. So I like Padre. But I'd read some interesting information last year that the top schools top schools with graduate students from sociology classes, with psychology classes and all that, the doctors were being offered massive positions at tech companies, mm-hmm. because they're using now psychological trickery, is what I will call it, to keep us. I call it the Facebook move. It's when people are just, they're just sitting there for, and I will get in it as well. I'll pick it up and I'll be like, what am I doing? And you don't know why you're scanning. And here's why you're scanning, because there's a doctor that's watched hundreds of thousands of people do it and has figured out how to keep that scroll going. But we're fighting against data and technology that is measuring hundreds of thousands of people per minute on what will keep you going. Their only job is to keep you picking up this phone. How do we, so as parents with younger kids, any suggestions that we can offer to say, rather than just give me that phone, I'm taking it away from you. That usually works in my house. But other than that, anything else that we can suggest to get people to say, hey, why not put down your phones and let's do this?
Well, I think, first of all, don't give your kids a smartphone before they're at least 11 or 12 years old. Start there.
Yeah.
When they do get the smartphone, maybe, you know, have more control. So don't be afraid of them having the device, but have control of the device. So if they want to add new platforms or apps, you hold the password. Yeah. So they have to come to you, you put it on. They can have that. So you have some control. Beyond that, I think that it's so important that families discuss this issue. You know, we had the say no to drugs issue for so long. Families get together. Let's talk about this. This is the new drug. Let's sit down. Let's talk about it. And let families together create a covenant. Okay, what's the agreement? What are the expectations? What are the consequences? Let's do it together with families, because I think the sort of top-down parents saying, this is the rules, this is it, I don't think that's working, because I think there are families who have those rules, but the kids are under the table looking down, and they can do it with one hand, and you don't even know they have their phone in their hand.
Yeah, if you're a parent that thinks you're smart, trust me, your kid is probably a little smarter in how to get their devices turned on when you don't think they're turned on.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that this has to be dialogue. I don't think one of the phrases I use is, this has to create a mindset in the household, not create a mandate for how it runs. So we have to have that mindset about phones. They're not the enemy. They're not the devil. It's the users, right? Phones are inanimate. It's the users that create this issue.
It's funny because I think a lot of people that have kids have a love-hate relationship with technology. Mm-hmm. I hate it, except for when there's a traffic backed up and I need to use it to reroute myself. Mm-hmm. Then I'm like, give me that phone. I better turn it on. They're like, oh, I thought you weren't turning the phones on, Dad. Or, you know, if I got to find something. So if it's used for that tactile ability to help us out, the utilitarian way, it's going to help us, give us some information. Then I think it's great. But what's happened is it's really turned into a leisure hobby that has extended beyond the leisure level. And, I mean, when we were growing up, people would say, do you realize that the average kid is watching, you know, 8 hours of TV a week? And my mom would gasp. And she's like, 8 hours? You shouldn't be watching 8 hours. But I think phones are in kids' hands. I mean, they're in all day at school. And finally this year, the school has said, you can't take it away. And I'm like, what took so many years? Like, I have two kids that are already, one's in college, one's out of college. But they would have their phones and they would be texting me during class. I'm like, aren't you in class? And they're like, teachers can't take the phone away. But, you know, if it comes down to one person complaining that they need to get a hold of their kid, whatever, and adults, as we're seeing in this day and time, adults get very scared of what kids say.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I've read things that the high-tech, like Silicon Valley, more of that space, they, like the kids of these tech geniuses, are going to schools that are tech-free. So yeah. We are sending our kids and letting them play all day. But meanwhile, these people are saying, no, we know the dangers. And it's because what you said, for the first time, instead of grabbing the kids from Harvard and business schools, they're scooping them up from psychology programs and things like that. I think that's really interesting.
You alluded to this. I'll use a bit of more of a harsher thing. This is the new drug.
It is.
And
it's the fastest growing addiction in the world.
It's funny because Mark Zuckerberg, and I'm not picking on him because great platform, but he was asked, hey, did you check in? When you were here, you want people to check in on your app all the time to let people know, did you check in to the hotel when you arrived? He's like, no. If you look at interviews, he's got his computers covered. He's not carrying tech around with him. Why? Because he doesn't want people to follow him.
Right.
Bill Gates, he uses technology for what it's supposed to be used for, but he's not surrounding himself with, oh, let me have all these phones and let me do this, because he realizes that, no, I want to use the tool for what the tool's for, mm-hmm. but when I'm on my time, it has to be my time. And Sherry's right. They're coming up. It's funny. You go to these high-tech areas and they're like, getting all excited about restaurants that are no cell phone restaurants. And it's like, but you guys created the addiction.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, the creator of the handheld device is Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He wouldn't let his kids have a tablet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's and he wouldn't let them go on social media platforms yeah. because mm-hmm. he went, no. And there is a hook to it. It is a design for that. It is designed to hook you. You know, when you look at the idea of I've heard this saying that data is the number one sold commodity mm-hmm. today. It's data. And when you look at things, you know, companies who now are out of business, but companies like Cambridge Analytics and some of those, they were claiming that they had 5,000 pieces of data on every American citizen.
And I believe it, because even what we do when we're doing ads for people, we are hitting specific data points. And this is general, and we're just basic. We're not these big tech companies that mm-hmm. are creating like apps and things and developing things to get to know you more. We're just using what Facebook hands us, and it's shocking what we can do.
And by out of business, that's a winky wink, just a different name.
Yeah.
They still know how to get the data.
Yeah, oh, for
but
sure.
But yeah, it was
for
5,000 data points and that they were having on everyone, which is... That's more than what you and I, our physical brain, can remember about each other. I mean, for Sherry, I could probably remember 10 things. Mm-hmm. I can only remember half my kids' birthdays.
Right.
So they have 5,000 things.
You can
on
remind
me.
Yourself on your phone, though.
Yeah, I can if I use the tech. But no, it really is a strange time that we're going into.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it, I think I just have this philosophy in my head. Some would call it conspiracy, but in years to come, we might look back and go, what a waste over 10, 20, 30 years that we did on social media thinking it would be great. Because there, but we are in, like you said, we're in the boon. We're in the gold rush. And we don't know, are we grabbing pickaxes right now knowing that there's gold down there? Or are we in the end of it? Or where are we? But I think we're at the beginning of a gold rush.
You touched on something really interesting, which you touched on last Sunday, was, or maybe a couple of weeks ago, the amount of wasted time
mm-hmm.
that we spend on our phone.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at the numbers, I looked at it and said, you know, somebody checks their phone every 4.3 minutes. That's the average.
Well, so, it's been 4 minutes. Let me
yeah,
check.
Yeah, I got that. And so if you take that and said, okay, we'll only do that, but we'll only be on 15 seconds each check, like when you look at it, it's 2 or 3 years of your life if you lived 85.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's incredible the wasting of time. But it's designed for that. I don't know how many people have said, oh, I was on Facebook and I lost track of time.
Yeah.
Because it's designed for that. It's designed to capture your brain. This is all about brain science. You talk about sociologists, but brain scientists are involved in this. How do we capture the brain? How do we create dopamine release? How do we do all those things so that we can get this to actually feel like pleasure?
If we go back about 75 years, Las Vegas, when they were opening up and when the casinos were opening up, they took, again, did the same thing. They went and they found doctors to say, how can we get people addicted?
Mm-hmm.
And they realized that, so a slot machine, it goes like this. It doesn't have to go like this. It can go like that and that and give you the answer. But it goes like this because that creates the dopamine feel at that moment. Not before it, not when it shows the win. The win, the dopamine feels, it's that anxiety of what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forwarding 75 years, you know, when you pull down your phone and it has that twirl, the lady who invented it said she looked at how slot machines worked and how gambling worked. And she said, based on that, I knew that people would like to watch to see what's coming in, and it's that anxiety, and that's what's creating that anxiety right there. What's coming in, we don't know if it's good or bad, and we truthfully, our brain doesn't care if it's good or bad. It cares that something's coming in, and when nothing comes in, what do? We pull it down again. But I read an interesting article about her that she sold that technology to Facebook, and then she started to question herself to say, what good did I add? There's a lot of tech people who have created things and sold them that are now starting to question, say, have I added any value to life or am I just destroying life?
Well, that's the fall of Cambridge Analytics. It was their own people who somehow got a conscience afterwards and kind of blew the whistle and said, you know what these people are doing, what they're capable.
Right.
I mean, they, you know, they're claiming that they were responsible for the Brexit vote going the way it did and for the last election in the United States. So, I mean, this is scary. Like, and I don't think we, and I think what we're doing is we're believing the marketing of these companies, but we're not getting all of the what's really going on. Like, I always wonder with things like, you know, the Google Home thing and that, you know, you can talk to it and it
well, spyware.
Are they listening to all my conversations?
Yes.
Like, really?
You know what? Actually, I went last year. I went to a conference and I was way out of my element. There was all these like tech geniuses there, and I was like, "Oh crap! What did I sign up for?" And we're sitting around the table, and Amazon was the guest speaker, and they said, "And whoever, whatever table like does the best, we're going to give you guys all an Amazon Echo or Google, whatever." And they're like, "No." They're like, I don't want to win that. And I was like, oh yeah, why not? And they're like, it always listens. And it not doesn't just listen. It literally stores what your conversation somewhere.
Well, and so to build on that, I know of a parent who have that in their home, and they were talking to their son about an autographed basketball. And when they went back onto Facebook, they got an ad from Amazon for an autographed basketball.
Yeah. That thing is there to sell us on more stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason. It's not to make our life easy. It's not to check the weather. It's literally so they can sell more stuff to us.
It's to create the story of your life is really what it is. We've done this before when we train a lot of people where we say, hey, has this ever happened? You're talking about something and next thing you know, an ad for that shows up and everyone puts their hand up. When I was in Eastern Europe in Ukraine and I found it odd that a lot of people had flip phones. They had a smartphone for work, but after hours it was a flip phone. And I got talking to them and it's like, why do you have a flip phone? And they said, why would we want Google and everyone to follow us around? Like, and I started to think, hold on, 50 years before that it was the secret police that would follow people around and write notes, and they got very conscious of who knows where they're at because they don't want everyone to know. But in a very Western world is, sure, let's let everyone know not only where we're going, what we've done, let's give a review, let's do this, let's do all of that, and share all this stuff. Because it's I think we've, from a, maybe purely from a satisfaction in our brain way, it's almost like a status symbol. Look at how much I'm doing. And the FOMO is that 1/29th of a second photo of me going, because my kids have been like, look at how much fun they're having. I go, that's 1/29th of a second. Anybody can stop for 1/29th of a second, but they could be yelling, arguing, screaming the rest of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't buy the hype.
Well, and that's, you see, I think that's the kind of thing that's leading to greater levels of mental health issues. Like, I really do. Because you're looking at that, and you're seeing people having the best time of their life, and maybe you're sitting all alone in your home, so it makes your loneliness greater, but then it creates this discontentment and rivalry and envy. Well, why can't I have it? I deserve it. I'm the same as them. So you have this dissatisfaction that builds. And so, of course, then you've got a device that you can shop with and buy and do all those things. on top of that, it's this idea where I think the biggest danger in this leading to significant mental health issues among young adults and the iGen is the whole comparison thing. Like, right, think of what that does to your self-esteem. Well, she looks prettier, he looks better, he's doing that. And all of a sudden you go, well, I'm not as good as them. And you start to feel a sense of self-worth. And we know there's a link between things like discontentment and a loss of self-worth and bullying, which is very common, and all the things towards the struggle with mental health issues. And I don't think we yet know, because it's this technology, we're only iPhone 11, right? We're 11 years into this. I don't think we have a clue of the ramifications. So you talk about, will we look back and say, what a waste of time? I'm wondering when we get there, we'll be saying, how are we going to fix this because of the brokenness that exists because of it?
Well, and not only that, there's data that's suggesting that what we actually use is really just the tip of the iceberg. The other 95% live under the surface. That's where your 4chan and all of those social communities, which are very dark web is what they call it, very dark communities live. I watched a thing the other day with the mosque in not Australia that was blown
New
up
Zealand?
In New Zealand, and they have messages on, the guy was on 4chan saying, here's what I'm going to do today, and that community, because he created a community within that dark web, was like, you know, I'll see you in, I forget where they said, it was an afterlife, I'll see you here, good luck, bro, and all that kind of stuff. So, an encouragement after he said, I'm going to blow up, a mosque today. I don't know if those were the exact words, but I'm going to do it today. And everyone was like, good luck, man, go for it, I'll see you, you know, in the afterlife. And so you now, that's his community. So if we're circling back to the dangers of it, it's, and we started with community, what community are you aligning yourself with? And oftentimes it's, we want to be with birds of a feather. We want to be in our community because the rest of the world doesn't get us. So we want to be with the people that do get us, which is why I hang out with absolutely handsome men like myself and who are funny and gregarious. But again, a lot of the people can discern what the dark slippery slope is, but for those that can't, how do we avoid that?
Well, and you know what? Many can't, because these apps and platforms give you certain outs, but the average person doesn't take it. So you look at a platform like Snapchat, which is quite popular, very popular. What you don't know, and you can sign off of this, but you have to do it. They don't say, do you want to? You have to do it. They can, it's GPS connected, and you don't have to give permission for other people to find out where you are. Finding a friend on, you know, like Facebook, you know, find a friend or whatever it is. You have to, when somebody puts your name in, you have to agree. Not on Snapchat. So all of a sudden we can find people. It's funny. We think our phones are giving us greater anonymity. The opposite is true. They are giving us, because they're not giving us that. People are looking into our lives. People know where we are, what we're doing. We don't have anonymity.
And it's funny you say that, because 2 weeks ago we were going into Cambridge to meet a friend, and we couldn't get a hold of them. And someone was like, oh, hold on. One of the kids in the back says, turn here. I'm like, how do you know that? They're like, oh, we just checked the Snap map. And I go, what do you mean? Oh, it shows where you're at. Kind of like Foursquare used to. You know, what friends are close to you? From that practical point of view, great. From the dangerous point of view, not so good. Because now someone stalking them can go, I can get within 100 meters of this person, and if I know what they look like, I can find them fast. So it really is a dangerous time. So from what are you suggesting to parents?
Well, parents.
So communication obviously is key, but beyond the communication,
make sure, to the best of your ability, I think that's the word, you know what's going on in your children's devices. Have some sort of awareness. Like, it's one thing when your child's 19 or 20 to say, let me check your history. They're going to rebel against that. But maybe below that is to say, hey, you know, one of the things you need to know is we're going to check your history. We're going to, you know, these are the things that are going to, you want this. These are the responsibilities, not the punishment. These are the responsibilities you have. And so parents need to be aware. I think parents need to model it. the very parents that are saying to their kids, put your phone down, have their phones up far too often.
Right.
One of the things I suggested last week was a central charging station at night. Everybody puts their phone somewhere and it's nobody's bedroom.
Right.
Yeah.
That way you're keeping it out of their bedroom because it's what they do when they're alone, whether it's alone late at night when everyone's sleeping or alone, whatever, that's going to create the issues. So again, it's how do we minimize that? We're not going to eliminate this. This is not going away. And this is parents. So there was a survey recently done, and it's in a book called The TechWise Family. And on the front end, it says the number one issue parents are most fearful of is the use of technology by their children. It's the number one thing parents are concerned because it's so hard to deal with this. It's not an easy task.
Yeah, and we see that on Facebook. Like, even today I saw someone saying, oh, this kid's missing, and it was connected to, I think it was probably Snapchat with their GPS feature. And as parents, we know they're smarter than us. Like, even my kids, like, things they can do, and they're a lot younger, I'm like, oh, boy, I have to, like, research this, I have to find out. So these things are overwhelming for parents. And, yeah, I think you're right. Communication is key. With my daughter, I bring these things to her attention before she's necessarily, well, I mean, all her friends have phones. But I say, you know what? You had a rough day at school. People were mean to you. Now you can come home and you're safe. This is a safe haven. Imagine if your phone was here. You're inviting these people into your house nonstop. So I'm trying to educate her before the tough conversation of, okay, I have my own money, I'm getting a phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So, but we've been talking for very long. Any last words of wisdom?
I don't know if words of wisdom, I just words of caution.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to be careful. I mean, I love, so I'm not an anti phone person. I use it like everybody else pretty fully. In fact, my wife often has to say, can you put that down, right? So I'm there. But I think what I've learned in the last, especially the last 4 weeks, researching this, we need to be incredibly cautious. There are benefits, but the destructive nature, it's very dominant, and we need to be aware of it. I think it's just an awareness of how bad it really is. As I look at some of the stats, I was like blown away saying, really, really? Like one stat that came across this week, it just blew me away, that the pornography industry profit, their profit per year is $15 billion. That's bigger than the NFL, mm-hmm. Major League Baseball, and the NBA combined.
Yeah.
And so we need to be aware of this. We need to be aware of what's going on. And as I say, parents especially, become the best student you can of not just what your child's doing with the phone, but what can happen. Like, research it. We've got the devices. Let's use them.
Yeah, perfect. All right.
Awesome. Well, listen, if there's any questions that you guys have, please pass them over to us. If we can help, we will. If not, we'll send them on to Dave for those tough questions.
Yeah.
And we look forward to being back with you guys next week for another episode on Level Up Academy Podcast. This is Trevor.
And Sherry.
Signing off.
Thank you.